Welcome to part two of Beyond Socially Responsible Investing with Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm your host, Harry Blazer. Part two is entitled Solari Portfolio Strategy, The Power of Financial Intimacy. We assume that you have listened to part one and remind you to refer to the event resource page, a link to which is included when you purchase the audio seminar. There you will find the two sample portfolios we will be discussing, as well as many other useful tools, comments, and references. Don't worry if you don't fit the profile in the examples exactly. The Solari strategy is useful for everyone, whether you are an experienced investor looking to reposition your portfolio or just starting out to build a portfolio from scratch. And now, part two of Beyond Socially Responsible Investing with Catherine Austin Fitz. And now we're going to put some meat on the bone. But before we do, I want to ask a few questions about our title. We have this word intimacy here, a whole new paradigm for investing.
It is. Implicit in the notion of financial intimacy is that our money, wherever it goes and whatever it does, is connected to us. Right now, if you look at most financial portfolios, people really don't know who they're investing in. They don't know where their money's going. They don't know what it does. They're disassociated. And their map of their day-to-day life is separate and different from their map that they use to manage their money. And what we're looking to do, Harry, is to integrate those in a way that says, investing in the people that I know and trust, in the things that I know and trust, or that the people I know and trust, and working through networks of trust, which is intimate. In other words, we have knowledge, we have mastery. It's our world, we understand. So using our money to create an intimate world is the model that we're looking for. What our money touches, we touch. What our money does, we do. And we want to take advantage of the power of that intimacy to do better, both for ourselves and for the world.
So the more we know, the better we're able to deploy our money, and the better we're able to deploy our money, the more knowledge and power it gives us in our world.
Yes.
So strategies have goals.
Yes.
Okay. And it's this kind of a synergistic plan to achieve those goals.
Yes.
And is it safe to say that the goal of a Solari portfolio strategy is increasing the popsicle index?
Yes. Yes. What we're trying to do is withdraw resources from the tapeworm economy and re-engage them in things which cause the popsicle index in the world to go up in a way that causes ours to go up. Our focus always with our portfolio is the popsicle index for ourselves and our family.
Okay, so let's take another minute, if we can, to just take a look at this popsicle index. Now, there's a definition and a kind of an operational definition that we have. Why don't you restate that?
Popsicle index is the percent of people in our community who believe a child can leave their home, go to the nearest place to buy a popsicle alone, and come home alone safely.
Okay. Now, Mr. Greenspan probably wouldn't agree that that is an optimal indicator.
Mr. Greenspan absolutely would not agree. Mr. Greenspan would say that that is much too simple and much too subjective, something that depends on what the people in a neighborhood feel as opposed to what academic experts can calculate.
But in addition to that, what we're saying in a complex world, there's something that we can know through how we feel about what we know intimately.
Right. Right.
That can actually give us as much or more information than these math-based indicators.
Right. And we're not looking for something that is accurate in the academic sense. We're looking for something which is useful in engaging in collaboration and conversation.
So any time that you've used this as kind of a catalyst for a discussion about, you might say, quality of life indicators,
right,
which is what the Fed's trying to get at too, ultimately,
right,
it actually is a very useful tool, right?
It's a remarkably useful tool. One of the reasons it's so useful is it's very simple. You want something that's very simple. You want something that's simpler than the Dow Jones Index. But you also want something that any person in the neighborhood can know the answer to. And when I get groups of people in a room and we talk about what causes your popsicle index to go up and what causes it to go down, and each person defines those and we collect them and we average them and we discuss them, what emerges is phenomenal group intelligence about what's important and what's not. about how people really feel. I'll never forget being out in Sebastopol, California, which is a very well-off, affluent community where the parents believe their children are very safe, and with a mother and a seven-year-old child, and I asked them both what their popsicle index was, and the mother said it was very high, and the child looked at the mother and said, "Well, Mom, my popsicle index is 0% because you won't let me walk across the street to Safeway because of the traffic. So if I can't walk over to Safeway to get a popsicle, it's zero, and that's how I feel." And it was the most remarkable conversation because they really didn't understand, you know, how each other felt about safety in the place.
So the point is, this can be a very useful tool to catalyzing a deep discussion about quality of life.
True wealth. Because what emerges in any discussion of the popsicle index, ultimately a financial person can very easily identify where the equity creation opportunities are in a community, both to create living equity and in many cases financial equity. I mean, I dare say if we had a publicly traded venture fund or mutual fund for any community that didn't have a 100% popsicle index, if you want to get that stock to go up, the way you do it is you get the popsicle index to go up.
Well, actually, what I think is you're pointing to something very critical, which is in Solari's world, quality of life and wealth have an integration, which is
right.
Not the same in our current non-Solari world, you might say.
Right. The two are disassociated in a way which is very destructive of financial wealth.
So we're going to get specific here, right? We're going to take a look at Portfolio A and Portfolio B. And Portfolio A is before Solari and Solari's perspective or analysis, you might say. And then B is a portfolio that's consistent with a Solari optimization strategy.
We're going to have before and after. So let's take a look at before. We're going to work, Harry, with $1 million portfolios. So we're talking about a family that has assets of $1 million, including their home. And the first portfolio is very typical of a portfolio that people believe is very financially conservatively invested.
Let's look at it in terms of assets and liabilities and income. So first, what's the income of these folks, this fictional couple?
Harry, we have $175,000 of annual income, $125,000 from one spouse's full-time consulting job. They also have health care. And then the other works part-time freelance for $50,000. So $175,000 of total annual income.
Okay, so tell me like what my run rate is. What's my annual expenses against that income?
My run rate is $160,000.
Okay, so basically I'm adding $15,000 a year from the net difference between income and expenses on kind of a yearly basis.
Right.
Okay. Let's talk about, when we look about assets, we always talk about home is one of the most important assets.
Right.
So tell me about my home.
I have a $500,000 home in the suburb with a $350,000 fixed-rate mortgage. It's a 30-year mortgage. It's 25 years left to go. I also just got a condo at the shore, second home, that's valued at $350,000. I financed it with a $300,000 variable-rate mortgage, and I have a $50,000 second mortgage from the seller. It's interest-only with a balloon in 5 years.
Okay, so basically, even though I got all this nominal dollar worth of property, after all my debt, my net equity is at today's market is what, $150,000, right?
Right. So I've got $850,000 worth of real estate, but I've really got net equity of $150,000. Now, if inflation takes off in a way that those houses go up, I'm fine. If interest rates take off and the value of the houses don't go up, I'm not so fine.
Right, and you've addressed some of this in Navigate the Housing Bubble,
right,
audio seminar, right, which we might recommend to folks. Okay, so now I've got to start on my $1 million worth of assets. I got $150,000 of net equity in my house. So how is my other $850,000?
Okay, so I've got $25,000 in tax-exempt bonds from my local school district. And the other $825,000 is allocated in corporations and governments, so it's very much in securities. I've got $150,000 in full faith and credit of the U.S. government, which is divided into treasury notes and bonds and Ginnie Mae securities, which
okay,
is...
Okay, so that's now we're at $325,000.
Right. I've got $75,000 in indirect credit, Fannie Mae's, Freddie Mac's, Sally Mae debentures. This is all fixed income.
Okay, I'm at $400,000.
I have $150,000 in a world bond fund, which is very high credit quality foreign sovereign governments, and so that's not denominated in dollars. It's denominated in other currencies, even though it trades in U.S. dollars.
Okay, so that's 550.
I've got 50,000 in a corporate bond fund, more fixed income.
600.
I got 150,000 in bank CDs at three big banks, J.P. Morgan, Bank of New York, and Citibank.
I feel safe. That's 750.
I've got $10,000 in my Citibank checking account, and 25,000 in my Fidelity tax exempt fund. Those are what we call short term and cash equivalents. That's another 35.
Okay, that's 785.
Okay. In my equity funds, I've got 75,000 in individual stocks. I've got 40,000 in an energy fund, and I have 100,000 in two SRI social index equity funds.
Okay, and that brings you up to do-re-mi.
$1 million. Right.
Obviously, it can be different scale. You could have more, you could have less.
Right.
But a lot of folks would look at this and say, yeah, well, this is fairly well diversified. And
very conservatively managed. We have a very high ratio of our liquid assets to our annual expenditure. So I have more than five times in liquid assets what my annual expenditures are. And that looks pretty conservative.
It does.
Yep.
So how are we going to critique this now?
Well, the first thing I'm doing is I'm going to make sure that the Popsicle Index goes down because I'm investing in just about all the things I say I hate. And we have the detailed list up on the event resource page, but essentially I'm investing in all the players who are responsible for $4 trillion missing from the U.S. government, for manipulating the gold market and other market manipulations, for environmental destruction, warfare, poisoning the food system, and a few other things. So I really, you know, if I'm upset that the Popsicle Index isn't 100% worldwide, I have no place else to look but the mirror. I'm profiteering from all the things I say I hate.
Okay, but now, Catherine, some of these corporations must be doing something good, not just all bad things.
Absolutely. But the challenge is we are investing in a series of players whose economic well-being depend on these things. In other words, at this point, the U.S. government finances depend on more war and coercion to basically continue to borrow the money that we're borrowing to finance the budget. So we're dealing with a system which is fundamentally unsound.
Some people would make the argument that, you know, in life, you always got to get some good with some bad. But what you're saying is that
optimization is about getting more good with less bad.
Right. So the question
and that's
is,
what we want to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so keep
right.
going. How else would you critique portfolio A?
But
here?
I think the most important thing for anybody to understand about this portfolio is it is riskier than we believe. I mean, problem number one is we're not clear about what our money's doing, where it's going and what it's doing. And we're not clear about how our own personal investments are connected to what we say we hate in the world and would like to see changed. So one, our map is disassociated. We don't understand how our investments are connected to the world that we operate and live in. So there's a disassociation. There's an absence of intimacy in our understanding. But the second thing is, we're not diversified. If you look at this portfolio, whether it's the banks, the corporations, whether it's the corporate bonds or corporate stocks, whether it's the companies in the SRI fund, we're deeply dependent on the federal government and the ability of the federal government to continue to borrow significant amounts of money, backed up as it is by the U.S. military, to keep our portfolio doing well. And so that is an absence of diversification and a dependency which is increasingly risky. And part of the question of a falling dollar is if the dollar does fall or fall significantly, we could get whipsawed across the board in the value of our portfolios.
Doesn't sound really intimate either, does it?
No, it's very unintimate and it's very undiversified. And you need to think about a scenario where there is problem continuing to borrow as much money as the federal government does. We're in a situation where our income goes down at the same time that our assets go down in value, at the same time our debt goes up in cost.
So there's some inherent risks here that are quite unobvious from a traditional perspective.
Right. From a traditional perspective, someone would say this is a very conservatively managed portfolio. But in fact, it's all tapeworm.
Okay, so how do we build a new world here?
The philosophy of a financially intimate portfolio says you have to think much more about who than what. Who am I investing in, and who are they impacting? Who do I know? Who do I trust? What do I know? What am I interested in? And you start with your life and your popsicle index, and everything emerges out from there.
So in other words, build a good home base.
Build a good home base. But as you build a home base, understand the economic values flowing around you. What causes my electrical bill to go up? What causes it to go down? What products and services do I love? Who do I know? And what are they doing? Who are the people I think are winners that I'd like to back and profit from their success?
So you're using the opportunity to invest as a way to improve your map of the world, too.
Right. And the two are reinforcing. But you want to make sure that you understand for everything that you invest in how it connects to your life and how it makes your popsicle index go up and down. And you want to understand generally in the world what's causing the popsicle index to go up and down. And you want to see opportunities to make money from doing things that cause the popsicle index to go up or that stop the popsicle index from going down. So you're using the notion of building a better world as a navigational tool to find opportunity.
I like that idea of, hey, making money by making the popsicle index go up. Okay, so home base here. We're gonna build a nucleus that forms a foundation, right?
Right.
For the rest of our investment. So this is actually one of the most important investments we can make.
In any financially intimate portfolio, you're going to end up with a higher percentage of your assets invested in your local area. So you choose a place, not just because that's where you're going to live, but that's also going to be a very critical area of your investment opportunity. And so you want to pick a place and you want to live in a place that is investable. It's the kind of place you'd like to invest money in.
So what would be some of those criteria?
Well, I have a Solari Investor Circle, and we decided when we started to contemplate investing with each other, we said, okay, the first most important decision we have to make is where do we want our home base to be? So we said, okay, being process people, what's the criteria for choosing a place? And it was fascinating, Harry. It took about 4 weeks of discussion to come up with our criteria. And I can't emphasize enough how important it is to not take somebody else's criteria wholesale, but to work through the criteria yourself of what you think is important and why. But we listed out 8. We listed them in detail on the event resource page. But just to summarize them, the first thing we said is, who do you want to share your life with? It was all about people. Who are you going to live next to? Do you have people there that you love who care about you care about? And so the most important thing in terms of building a wonderful and high popsicle world is really being in alignment with the people in your place. And so it's
who you can trust.
Who can you trust? Intimacy requires trust. The second thing was, what are the resources and services in that place which will support local self-sufficiency? So whether it's food, water, air, all the basic municipal services, do we really have the essential resources and services in that place? The third thing is, what are the cultural, educational, and spiritual health of the place? Do we have the kind of cultural activities and leadership that we want, et cetera? The fourth was, is the environment wonderful and supportive of physical health? The fifth was, is the jurisdiction respectful of personal and property rights? Is there a likelihood of change in laws harmful to you? And this was one that was very important. We were all Americans in the group, and there was real concern about the deterioration in respect for personal and property rights in the U.S. One of the big questions we had to ask was, did we want to leave the country or not? Number 6 was local economic health and vitality. Very important, because if you're going to invest, you want to know that this is a place where there's a critical mass of economic activities that are going to make it investable. 7, what are the special risks? For example, I live in a tornado area, so there are always special risks, one of which is weather. And then bottom line, what's the popsicle index and what are the factors that are causing it to rise or fall in that place?
Now, again, on the resource page, there's a lot of detail associated with each one of these, but I think that's a pretty good overview. Who do you want to share your life with? What are the self-sufficiency, quality, and costs of essential resources and services? What is the cultural, educational, and spiritual health of the place? Is the environment wonderful and supportive of physical health? Is the jurisdiction respectful of personal property rights? What is the local economic health and vitality? What are the special risks involved? And bottom line, what is the Popsicle Index? So it's a who question and a place question, too, right? So we're starting to understand a little bit about what it means to come at investing from a paradigm of intimacy. And I guess as we go through these further examples, we're going to find out a lot more about that paradigm.
Well, let's take our family and let's look at what a financially intimate portfolio would look like.
So this is Portfolio B, right?
This is Portfolio B. This is after getting with financial intimacy.
Just so that we're totally clear, Catherine, what's happening is this is the same family that's in,
right,
that's in Portfolio A.
They're moving to a financially intimate world.
And it's a reallocation of the assets.
Right. All the assets are reallocated.
Okay, so let's take a look at how they've reallocated them.
Our income has dropped. We've moved to a low-cost area. It's a rural farming community. And we have $100,000 of income instead of $175,000. One full-time consulting with health care for $75,000. And $25,000, which is part-time freelance. However, we have less dependency on government contracts. And we have significantly more time available for our investment activities and our activities to bring our expenses down.
And maybe enjoy life a little bit more, too.
And enjoy life a little bit more. We have annual expenses of $75,000. We could cut back to 50. As we're going to see, we've put significant investments into our farm. So we can live, you know, very well for very little. But interestingly enough, we're saving $25,000 a year.
Which is $10,000 more than before.
Right. So we have a much higher savings rate.
So we're earning less, less expenses, ending up saving more.
Right, and we're spending much more time in our investment activities and learning about the things that could make our investment activities powerful. We have a 30-acre farm. We bought that for $190,000, no debt, no debt. But we've put significant amount of money into improvements in the farm, which are designed to bring our expenses down permanently. So whether it's energy or food, we're much more self-sufficient than we were. Got $110,000 of improvements, so now we have $300,000 in equity in our home base, which is double what it was before. The natural beauty and comfort of our home is far more significant than it was before, because we were in a suburb, we were in a high-cost area, and so we could not begin to buy as much quality for our money.
I don't know, though, if everybody moved to the country, there'd be some real good deals in the city, right?
Yeah, they're good. Okay, so that's our home base. Now, we now have $700,000 to allocate to all of our other assets, okay? And what I want to do is I want to create a new framework, which is different than the traditional framework. We want to divide the portfolio into four quadrants. Think of it with two rows and two columns. One of them being local versus global, and the other being liquid versus illiquid.
So you'd have a local liquid and a global liquid, and then a global non-liquid and a local non-liquid.
Correct. And when I say local, I mean the place that we live, where our home base is. When I say global, I don't mean big global corporations. I don't mean investing in big global corporations. I mean investing in other places. So global is other places, not where my home base is. Liquid means I can sell it quickly and I can see transparent pricing for it. So if I own a publicly traded stock, I can sell it quickly. I can see what the price that I could sell it quickly as. Non-liquid, for example, your home is the perfect example, can take much longer to sell.
Okay, so it's actually kind of an interesting way to look at the world. Local versus global, where global is everything that's not local.
Right.
And then liquid versus non-liquid. I'm just curious, is there any philosophy in particular behind this matrix or this view of looking at the world?
Absolutely. We're trying to go from a paradigm that is mechanical, where we're investing in things.
Or more function-based, you might say.
Right, more function-based, to being very concrete about where we are. So we're going from stuff to people and places.
And we're also keeping a very close eye on the lifeblood of of any economy, which is cash flow. So we look at liquid versus non-liquid. So we make intelligent decisions based on risk analysis of how much we want liquid versus non-liquid.
Right. Now, all of this organizes out of my life and my home base according to who I know and what I know, and I only go as far as I can intimately. In other words, I only go into those things where I can have an intimate relationship to who's doing it. I can have intellectual mastery of what it's doing.
Intimate knowledge, in other words. You can know what the heck's going on.
Intimate knowledge, but intimate feeling. In other words, I can have a heartfelt connection. If I invest $25,000 in Fannie Mae, it's very hard to have a heartfelt connection. It goes off, it does something, you don't know who's on the board, you don't know who governs it. But intimacy is about having a heartfelt connection and being able to use not only my intellectual knowledge, but the knowledge that I feel through my heart. But if I can get them both working for me and my money, that's when things start to get powerful.
Actually, this is a way that a lot of very successful traditional investors operate. They know about the demographics of a place. They know about the management team of a business.
Right.
They actually go and see and touch and feel, sometimes as mystery shoppers, and they get a gut feel. They sit across from the people involved, look in their eyes, and get a real gut feel about what that management team's made of.
Right. To a certain extent, what I'm proposing is the philosophy that the richest people in the world use to manage their money is one that we all use. And that is really having intellectual mastery of who and what you're doing business with. We've developed an ethic in many parts of the world, and certainly in the United States, where we think we can just blindly put our money into the tapeworm and we'll get a nice yield, and we don't need to think about where it's going or what it's doing. I've never known a wealthy person who would practice that, or I've never known anybody who built a fortune practicing that. They practice great intimacy. They have intellectual mastery of where their money is going and what it's doing, and they don't put their money into things where they don't have a relationship and they don't have the ability to enforce. In other words, if you have a personal relationship or an institutional relationship, your money is much safer than if you're just putting it with strangers and you have no way of enforcing accountability.
Okay, so we've put more meat on the bone on this concept of financial intimacy. In the philosophy of investing from a perspective of financial intimacy. So now how are we going to invest that $700,000 that's left?
Okay, well then let's walk through the four parts of our portfolio. The first is local liquid. So liquid assets in our place. We've now switched from banking at Citibank and Fidelity to our local community bank. We have $5,000 in our checking account. We have the CDs instead of being in the big banks in our local community bank. And we have cash, silver, and gold coins both in our deposit box and at home. We've also got $25,000 in publicly traded stocks of companies in our area. So we know people who work there. It's much easier to really understand what's going on at the company because we have very robust sources of information about them and what they do. And then finally, we have some tax-exempt bonds, but in a local municipal agency run by people we really know and trust.
Okay, so of that $700,000, we've clicked off here about $75,000 between our checking account, our CD, some cash, silver, and gold coins between deposit box and our stash at home, and publicly traded stocks from local companies and local tax-exempt bonds.
Right. And I just ought to mention for people who want to know how to do that, how do I switch my bank or how do I invest in precious metals, we have an audio seminar, Where Would Jesus Bank, to help you pick a good local community bank. And we've got a series on precious metals to help you learn how to do that.
Great. Okay, so we got $625 left. Now what do we do?
Okay, well, now let's go to global non-liquid. And now we have $200,000 invested in global non-liquid, $100,000 in gold and silver bullion in a depository in Europe. So we've chosen, as a matter of security, to take a pretty big bet on an insurance policy, and we're using precious metals to do that. So in a worst case, that's an asset that will be very valuable, and it's not liquid. It's not immediately liquid because we'd have to fly over to the depository and get it, but it's really important for our worst case scenario.
Are you saying that they couldn't sell it for you and send you the money?
Not in this arrangement. although you can arrange those. So you can make it much more liquid. If you did it in a pool, it'd be highly liquid. But we chose to put it in a safe deposit box.
Okay.
We have $90,000 in an investment in land and cottage next to a cousin-in-law's farm in Latin America. So we're out of the country, but we're out of the country. We're global through family and friends. We're investing next to people we know. And we've moved $50,000 into a bank account and CDs in that area because we're reserving that money for improvements to the land and cottage and also investment in our cousin-in-law's farm. They have a farming operation there. And the last item is we have a $10,000 angel investment. An angel investment is, in financial terms, an angel is somebody who puts in very early venture capital money. One of our college roommates has started a wind farm company, so we have $10,000 angel investment in that, and that gives us a global non-liquid portfolio of $200,000. I should mention, Harry, wind and wind energy is one of the things we're very interested in for our farming community. So
what I think is important is to get a sense of why you've made these decisions, which you're giving us,
right?
But also to let people understand that there's, of course, tremendous flexibility to suit their needs,
right?
So they could divide their assets among these four categories
right.
the way they see fit.
Right, and it keeps coming back to who do you trust, and what do you want to know about, and what do you think are things which build a better world?
What you can have intimate knowledge of.
Right.
Okay, so the next category is global liquid, eh?
Global liquid. Okay, we have $25,000 in digital gold and silver. So that's a precious metal investment, which is highly liquid. I can jump on the internet and transfer it here and there. We have $75,000 in what I call high popsicle index places. And so in that portfolio, I've got money market accounts where I had the land and cottage in my global non-liquid. And I've got some income generating stocks and bonds in countries that have a high popsicle index. That's the $100,000 of the global liquid. Let me go through the other two baskets. We have $25,000 in local stocks and bank CDs where family and friends live. So we have people that we really trust around the country. They're investing in stocks of companies, local companies. And as we learn about what they're doing, we want to put some money in the same kinds of, you know, companies that they've put us on to. It turns out about half of that is in local community banks that they're banking in.
And local in the United States?
Yes, okay. Local in the United States.
So it's important to stress again that global, the way that we're using the word, could mean New Zealand or Costa Rica, or it could mean the United States.
Right.
Someplace that's outside of our community.
Right.
Okay.
And finally, we've got a portfolio of $50,000 in small and mid-cap stocks of companies that are what we describe as popsicle index up. They're on the popsicle index up team. They're companies that are really part of solutions, you know, whether it's alternative energy or fresh food, but companies that are making products and services that really contribute to sustainable living. And it's very important in this portfolio that what we're learning as we make our own home base wonderful, what we see driving our energy costs down, improving our quality of food, water, air, as we learn about our own day-to-day living and day-to-day budget, we see what are the great companies that are really making a difference, where are the opportunities to make a difference for everybody.
And so, in other words, we can use our money to get the same positive effects in other locations
right.
that we're seeing the effect of in our own location.
Right. Every time that I, as a consumer or a depositor, can find a product or service that I love, the first thing I should say is, does that company sell stock? Can I buy stock in that company? I mean, it's a wonderful, your own life is a wonderful way of finding the best stocks.
So you'd focus on products and services that you love. What else?
Things that lower our bills, things that increase our home or neighborhood self-sufficiency. Big, important one, things that save us time. Anything that's, if something can save me an hour or two a week, that could be a great stock. Anything that improves our health and anything that makes fresh food available on an affordable basis are just some of the ones that I look for.
Okay, so we've got $175,000 in what we're calling global liquid. $25,000 of that is in digital gold and silver. $75,000 in high popsicle index places. $25,000 in baskets of local stocks and local bank CDs, and $50,000 in these small mid-cap stocks that are on the Pops Go Up team. Okay, so now we're down to $250. We got $250 left.
Right. Now, before we go on, I want to talk about what we're not doing in our global liquid portfolio. Because remember, before we had $825,000 in global liquid, all in big corporations and big governments. We're not investing in large corporations. We're not investing in government contractors. We're not investing in the 20 biggest banks in the United States, which I call the Tapeworm Banking 20. So we've really pulled out of the global corporate scene entirely. And one of the points I want to stress, and one of the points of the Solari audio seminar, is there are so many great places to invest that don't involve big global corporations.
Okay, so now we've gone through local liquid, global non-liquid, global liquid. Now we come to local non-liquid. And that's kind of back where we started building our home base, right?
Right. Right. So now we're back. We have our $300,000 farm and with improvements in our home base.
Which we've already counted.
We've already counted.
Okay.
We are investing $95,000 in mortgages for my sister and a neighbor. Okay. Now, here's an interesting point. If you look at our first portfolio, Harry, we were putting a bunch of money in Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae, and then those organizations were helping to originate mortgages in our neighborhood. So we shipped our money into a central point, and then that central point financed mortgages in our neighborhood. Now we're saying we don't need to take that loop-de-loop. We'll just go direct. So we're taking $95,000 that we're sending to central headquarters before it came back to mortgage finance in my neighborhood, and now we're saying, okay, we're just going to disintermediate the big guy.
Get rid of people in the middle, right?
Right. So we're cutting out the middleman and going direct. We have $5,000. We're refinancing a cousin's credit card. And in the process of doing this, what we've discovered is that many people in America are not really responsible about paying us back on time. One of the things we really need to warn people that when you go to a financially intimate process of investment, the power of it is where you have a culture that is highly responsible and highly ethical. And in our country, that culture has deteriorated in the last 20 years. And so it's very important as you step out and you start to do these things to get a good beat on who's responsible and who you can really trust to honor their obligations.
But the good news is that this cousin is 12 years old, so we can always send him to an orphanage, right, if he messes up.
Okay, we have $150,000 reserved for direct local investment, both by ourselves as well as the local pool in a Solari investor circle that we've started and we're working with.
So tell us a little bit more about this $150,000 that we're investing locally, where it's going, and about this Solari Circle idea.
We've gotten together a Solari Investor Circle, which is an investment club. It's a group of people who want to invest together, and they're going to create a pool, and one of the pools they're going to create will do local investment.
Okay, so in other words, a portion of this $150,000 will be reserved for direct local investment decisions we make ourselves.
Right.
And part of it's going to go into this pool of this Solari Investment Circle, which
right.
is really an investment club.
For example, one of the things we're looking at is financing building cottages on our farm that we could sell or rent to family and friends who also want to back a place, you know, and don't want to move.
Well, that's kind of clever.
So
I think that was killing three birds with one stone.
Well, we have lots of family and friends who can't leave the city. You know, they're in a high-cost area, but their job is there. They're not as mobile. Their wife doesn't want to leave, but they want a backup place.
Okay, so let's explore how this Solari Investment Fund might, what they might do with that pool of money.
Okay, so one investment we're talking about doing is a hand or partnership, which is really a way of depositing a portion of our money with each other. And it's a way that some people use to aggregate big chunks of money that they use for down payment on a home or buying a business. We determine an amount for the hand. So let's say the amount is $1,000 and there are 10 of us. Every month we come together, we put $1,000 in the pot, and one person takes it. And it's literally a way of creating interest-free loans among each other. And what it means is there's something in the financial world called float. A financial institution makes money because the deposits are in their bank and they get, quote unquote, the float. It's a way of making sure that you and your friends get the float.
So every 10 months I'll get $10,000.
Right.
Use, or $9,000, actually, because I don't put in my own.
Right. The second is we're thinking about buying bullion coins together and participating in a monthly acquisition plan to build coins. And with that, one of the things we've been talking about, because several of us have bullion both in our local area and in Europe, is using some of that bullion to help develop a community currency that's backed by the bullion. The third thing we're interested in doing is a credit card pool. We've got a lot of neighbors with high credit card debt, and they're paying 20 to 30%. And this is another area where there's real opportunity for disintermediation, because we don't need to put money in Citibank and then have Citibank come and loan money back to our neighbors at 20 or 30%. We can just refinance them out, and we get a higher yield than we were getting before on our Citibank CD or a Citibank checking account or our stock on Citibank. And so we get a higher yield, and they pay a reduced rate. But again, because this is tricky, who can you really look to be responsible and reliable, we'd prefer to do it in a pool where we can get some diversification and sort of, you know, split up the risk in different ways. The next thing we're looking at doing, which is very, very important, is angel investing in micro equity, helping to incubate new businesses or helping small businesses get access to equity that they normally don't have. Most small businesses are dependent on bank debt, which is very expensive. And so the opportunities for equity investment are great. We're very much focused on where there are aggregation opportunities. So where there are places that we can switch our money where we all would also want to switch our purchases. What are the stores we shop in? What are the businesses that we support? And what are the businesses that we would like to see get created here? You know, do we want a wellness center? Are we prepared to incubate and finance a wellness center getting started up? So angel investing in micro equity. Outside of the circle, we're looking at building cottages on our farm for rent or sale. But that's something a circle could participate in. And finally, we've started to look around and see if there are other circles in our area or people who would like to start them, as well as a local investment advisor, because ultimately what we'd like to see happen is a venture fund. Just as we have a mutual fund to invest in precious metals or energy, why not have a mutual fund, something like a mutual fund, to invest in the small businesses, the land and the farms and real estate in our area?
Individuals could do some of the things that you just listed for the Solidity
right.
Group.
In a financially intimate world, there's a lot to learn about, and there's a lot to track. It's much more fun to do it as a group because, let's say we want to switch to a local community bank, one person can research what are all the banks while another person is researching, okay, what are the most effective cottages to build on land like this? So you're talking about a very significant amount of things to learn about and lots of people to network with, and it's a lot more fun to do it together. I always tell people, you know, why worry about whether there is a conspiracy in the world or not, in a world of economic warfare? If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. So it's more than just an investment club. You're really conspiring to build equity and build wealth locally in a way that benefits you.
It seems that the Solari kind of turbocharges or gives leverage to your individual efforts in two ways I can think of, basically learning and maybe even providing through the pool some investment opportunities that you couldn't participate in by yourself.
Right.
But then also, I guess it could be a kind of a political force too, right?
Absolutely, because we're trying to use our money to build our world. One of the most important investments we can make is our time and our knowledge. And let's just talk about some of the things that we want to invest in and are on our list to consider investing in, which we're normally thought of as expenditures. The first thing is just learning. We're going to spend more time and money on building our knowledge of investing and venture capital, and also learning what the world is like and how to avoid some of the downsides of economic warfare and dirty tricks. And that's time and money that needs to be spent, whether it's books or getting audio seminars, getting subscriptions. We're trying to build and share a robust flow of knowledge about how our world works. Because remember, We're building a map that informs all of our lives on an integrated basis. We're not looking at our portfolio separately. The second thing is a great deal of the financial flows in any community are very much driven by government money and government rules and regulations. And so mapping the assets in our place, particularly the government money, resources, rules, regulations, how that all works is potentially one of the greatest opportunities. Because as we start to invest in small business, the more we can make sure that government budgets support a healthy local economy, the better off we will be. For example, I know you and I are always talking about, are the institutions funded with government money buying food from local farmers? Critical issue. Are they buying fresh and healthy food? So there are hundreds of small government reengineerings or changes that can happen. I always say to people, you know, don't let a big corporation come into your town and privatize the water. Start a venture fund and privatize it yourself. But that's going to start with mapping the assets and having intellectual mastery of how the money works in your place in the government budgets.
And actually, big corporations spend a lot of time doing that to look for those opportunities.
Absolutely.
Where they can take advantage of government grants and government expenditures to their benefit.
Right. The reason we have intelligence agencies is great investors know you need to spend a fortune on good intelligence to win economic wars and wars. Finally, we've got some, we're interested in putting together a budget for lobbying, a Go Local campaign, which will help switch business to the companies that we're invested in. I'm always interested to see whether the great local community banks are publicly traded. Because, in fact, if we start to operate on behalf of a rising popsicle index, one of the things we can do is we can switch our deposits to a bank if we can buy stock in it, if it's publicly traded. We buy stock. And again, it's very important we do this not as an insider. But if we buy stock and then start a going local campaign, we can increase the profitability of the bank we now own stock in. So our last investment in knowledge is a go local campaign, lobbying. Of course, lobbying is a big expenditure that the big guys make. And what we're going to do in this instance, we now invested in our community bank. We've invested in some local businesses. And we start a campaign to get our neighbors and people in our area both purchasing local, depositing local, and investing local. We're open about it. We're transparent. So we're not trying to sneak one over. We're making it clear that we're invested in these companies and trying to persuade them to do the same. If it works, it will advantage all of us. The more we map the assets, the more we understand how the financial flows, the more ability we have to find the opportunities of switching purchases, deposits, and other cash flows local now that we've got our equity position.
Okay, so part of the paradigm change here is that what you've just described, which is oftentimes looked as an expense, is actually an investment.
Right.
But you haven't really put dollar amounts next to these things. I guess we're just giving kind of a general indication
right.
to folks that they need to look at it as investment, and it may actually take some time and money.
Right. For example, I can start a data bank in my community and spend a lot of money building it quickly and very professionally, or we can all have a pile of information on our kitchen tables and over time, you know, week after week, month after month, slowly just start to learn about how the money works. So there's a low budget way and there's a high budget way to do it. And I think how you do it very much depends on what your resources are and where you see the strategic opportunities.
Why don't we go back now and take a look at where we were and where we are, right?
Yeah. So let's take a look at a little bit about the before and after. I have in this portfolio, I have a lower liquidity ratio, 3.3 times, whereas before I had about 5 times.
And by that you mean?
I had more liquid assets to my annual income. So I had over 5 years of money to pay my overhead if I lost my income. Here I have less, and one of the reasons is because that $100,000 in precious metals is in Switzerland, so we describe it as not liquid. But let's look a little bit deeper. I have no debt, and because of the precious metals, I have a portfolio that could really go up a lot in value in an Armageddon scenario. So on the downside, I'm much more protected. I can't get whipsawed the way I could by a combination of losing my job and having rising interest rates and falling assets. In fact, I have a lot more assets that if the dollar falls or the federal government runs into trouble, we'll do just fine.
Okay, so implicit in this is a very important recommendation, you might say, that it's better to have even less liquid assets and no debt than it is to have higher debt and what you might call traditionally placed liquid assets.
Right. Now, the negative here is we were getting real financial leverage from having big real estate assets with lots of debt. And so in a hyperinflation where interest rates don't kill you, if we got that into fixed rate on the condo, we could make a lot of money. The problem with that is we have a huge opportunity cost. And that is, we've got all of our time and money tangled up in the tapeworm, and we're not using those assets deployed in creating a sustainable lifestyle for us, our family, and our world. And we're not using our time to build that knowledge. And there's a point at which, if we can get our learning metabolism up and our networks, our collaborative networks learning, that knowledge is going to build much more financial equity for us faster than this other system.
So under Portfolio B, while you may perhaps lose an opportunity here or there to make a lot of money in a financial play, you're actually setting yourself up for a lot less risk over many different types of scenarios.
And you're setting yourself up to make much more financial equity. In other words, the first portfolio, if it works, will generate a nice yield. The second can build very significant wealth.
And in effect, is much more diversified.
What's interesting is if you count up the number of people you have vested in you, who you're vested in, and who want to be in cahoots with you, you've got a whole community, whether it's in your place or all over the place, whereas, you know, in the other, you're dependent on the tapeworm and you're isolated.
So let's go back and take a look at the Popsicle Index. It seems that voting with our money the way you're suggesting and investing the way that you're suggesting under Portfolio B, we've got a heck of a better chance of raising our Popsicle Index, right?
Oh, absolutely. Our Popsicle Index is higher, but it's always fun when everything and everybody in your life is about making the Popsicle Index go up. I mean, life gets fun, and it gets much happier.
But the goal, the real strategic goal is to get it to 100%, right?
Right.
And certainly, it seems that Portfolio B is a better way to get there.
Portfolio A is going to destroy the world.
That's not pulling any punches, is it?
You know, it's a little bit like investing in cancer. You're giving more power to something that is destroying the world, and as it grows bigger, it needs to destroy the world more and faster.
So, riskiness. Are we looking pretty good from a risk perspective?
Well, we're looking better, but we still have risks. And that's why I keep coming back, diversification, diversification. Our performance financially could lag for a period before our knowledge and the knowledge accelerator kicks in. So we have to be careful if we're tracking our financial performance against the Dow Jones Index to not, it's fine to track it.
Not to panic.
Not to panic, because we're investing money in knowledge, we're investing money in building the infrastructure and the base, and so our performance could lag a little bit, and that's why it's so important to operate and need less yield.
Basically, what we're saying is we're optimizing for the longer term, not necessarily the short term.
And we're optimizing for total equity. We're playing much for capital gains than for yield, and that's why it's critical to declutter and simplify and get our expenses down.
Optimizing for capital gain and not so much for yield. Just take
right.
a second and expound on that. That's a very important point, I think, because basically it's equity-based versus debt-based, right?
Right. It's we have a much higher component of equity and growth equity than we do in fixed income.
So basically yield is generally associated with debt, and capital gains is generally associated with equity.
Right. And traditionally we've been in debt because we thought it was safe. And once you look at what those companies are and the dependency on the federal credit, what we're realizing is maybe it ain't so safe.
Yeah, GM is now getting even junk bond status
right.
on their debt instruments. Okay, so what other risk factors are there to our Portfolio B?
Well, the biggest risk factor is what if we pick the wrong place? Because we're making a much bigger bet on where we live. and we're investing in that place. And so if we pick a place that we don't love or which really turns out to be non-investable, it's a much bigger cost. So it's very important to spend the time and energy to make sure that's the place for me. You know, we can pick a company and have it be the wrong company on a flyer, but picking our home base on a flyer is a very risky thing to do.
Why don't we summarize the two portfolios, before and after, in terms of this new matrix here that we've put in place, this local non-liquid, local liquid, global non-liquid, and global liquid.
Okay. Well, before, we had $150,000 in our local non-liquid portfolio. That was our net value of our real estate. After, we have $550,000, which is, you know, about a 3x increase. So we have significantly greater money invested in a local non-liquid. Then in the first portfolio, we had $25,000 in a local liquid. Now we have $75,000. So we've gone, if we just want to look at our local portfolio, before we had $175,000 local, now we have significantly more. We have $625,000 local. So it's fair to say, Harry, we have gone local.
Okay?
We had zero in global non-liquid. Now we have $200,000.
But again, so, global here for us meant anything outside our community, and global under Portfolio A meant big corporations.
Right. Transnational corporations or big governments is what it meant. Before, under global liquid, we had $825,000 against securities in big corporations and big governments. Now we have $175,000, none of which is in big corporations. A little bit may be in big governments. So that's a pretty big difference.
That global liquid is now in digital gold and high PopsCo index places and baskets of local stocks and local bank CDs. Yeah, quite a different definition of global.
Let me ask you one question. In the before portfolio, how many of the people leading the organizations that we had bought securities in knew our name?
Jeepers, Santa Claus doesn't even know my name.
Okay, in the after portfolio, how many people involved in running those companies know our name?
Yeah, probably quite a few.
Quite a few.
So we're getting more intimate, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
And they're getting more intimate with us.
Okay, now let's look at the two portfolios in another cut. In the first portfolio, about $850,000 was denominated in U.S. dollars, and about $150,000 our World Bond Fund and other currencies. Now we've got about $350,000 denominated in other currencies or precious metals, which I consider a currency. So we've really diversified more out of the dollar, despite the fact going local in the U.S. in a huge way.
Interesting.
So we're much more balanced globally than we were to begin with.
From a currency perspective.
Right.
Okay.
Another way to look at it is how much we have invested in things that are concrete or things that are non-concrete. Before, we had about $175,000 invested in concrete things. It was our home and the local school district. Now, almost everything is invested in concrete things or real things.
So, in other words, intimate things.
Right. So there's much more intimacy. It was interesting. In my former company, we built a software tool. You could put in your Fortune 1000 stocks, and it would print out a map of where your employees were. And it was an effort to try and create intimacy and help people understand that when you invest in a company, you're investing in certain places. And so to try and get the place disassociation out of their world.
It's kind of an interesting scenario because we're, in a way, we're more global. While we have zero global national corporations that we're investing in, where global means elsewhere, but not big multinational corporations.
One of the reasons we wanted to construct the portfolio this way was to help people understand you can be global in an intimate way. And in fact, a lot of the cultures that are the most successful with investment do it this way. They operate through networks of trust. They operate through family networks. They invest globally. They're very, very sophisticated, but in a very intimate and low-tech way.
And it seems that our wealth-building leverage comes from a totally different place.
Right.
Under Portfolio A, it's...
Our leverage comes from debt. In Portfolio B, our leverage comes from who we know and knowledge. What we're doing is we're combining knowledge with equity to generate significant capital gains by backing winners.
So debt-based, impersonal, non-intimate, with equity-based, network-based intimacy in terms of knowledge and relationships.
Right, and impact. One makes the popsicle index go down. The other makes the popsicle index go up. It's very hard for somebody to invest in a portfolio that makes the popsicle index going down without being disassociated from what's really happening.
Okay, so let me ask this. I have now more than $1 million, and I've got a heck of a lot less than $1 million. Can you give us maybe some general guidelines?
Yeah, well, let's talk about if you have less than $1 million. I mean, it's pretty easy for somebody who's got assets of $500,000 to go through this and scale it. But what about the guy who says, I don't have anything? You know, I rent my house. I don't have any money. What I would say to this guy is your neighborhood is full of people just like Portfolio A. And if they decide to become people with Portfolio B, that's a lot of liquidity that starts to create businesses and jobs in your neighborhood. So if you're going to build wealth, you have a vested interest in understanding their point of view and seeing what you can do to encourage them to think of their neighborhood and the business you want to start or the business you want to work for as a good investment. So you have a vested interest in helping folks with $1 million go from A to B.
Let's say I've got more than $1 million. Is it just a scale issue now, or can you give us some other guidelines?
Okay, the first thing you want to do is invest more time in yourself and your family. So anything you can do to decrease time that you spend away from your investing activities and get out of that and into something that will build you equity is good. The second thing is, who are the winners in your circles? Who are the entrepreneurs? Who are the venture capitalists who've done the best? You want to look for ways of taking, you know, your next million and investing more money in them and what they're learning about and teaching you. I like to be very safe on the downside, so of course I would be very happy to put more money offshore and more money in the precious metal. So before, if I have pots of money in two places, now I can afford to do five places if I have two or $3 million. So your global reach and what you can learn about and who you can know expands tremendously as you add assets to your portfolio. Finally, the most significant capital gains opportunity in the world is to build an equity-based financial system within a place where we can relate equity and capital gains on equity to the health of the environment and the popsicle index. So prototyping a venture fund for a place that could ultimately become liquid, to me, that's where the biggest play is.
Catherine, I know in other discussions we've had, you've talked about different tensions that exist between, you might say, different constituencies. Why don't you take a minute and relate how financial intimacy can act as a unifying force in a way,
right,
for these different constituencies.
Right. What we're trying to do in a financially intimate portfolio is we're trying to build a very unifying alignment between groups that have not been in alignment. For example, men and women. In many families, you'll find the man doing things to build financial wealth at the cost of living wealth. You know, so investing in the tapeworm, investing in defense contract or something like that, and the women very concerned about living wealth. And in a financially intimate portfolio, we're trying to reconcile that so the male point of view and the female point of view give each other energy. They're working for each other instead of against each other. Another is generations. You'll see the different generations very concerned. For example, you'll see the young folks concerned about all the debt they have to take on, you know, to get through school while their parents are sitting making money off of, you know, Sally Mae. And so you see different intergenerational tensions. And we're talking about a kind of investing that puts money behind the young people to build new businesses or to help build new businesses. We've talked about homesteading, things like that. A middle generation that has the management expertise to really do things, and then a retirement generation that has the savings and the wealth to really bank all of it. And so we're talking about bringing the different generations into alignment. And then finally, we're talking about bringing two other groups into alignment, and that is really the people who went to the cities and were great at science and technology, and the people who stayed on the land and were good at that. We're trying to create a model where science and technology, financial engineering, and natural process and environment are giving each other energy instead of pitted in a win-lose relationship. And so embedded in a financially intimate portfolio is the seeking out of ways that build those alignments between generations, between sexes, between different groups of people and different points of views in a way that makes us all money. And that's why having a simple organizing principle of the Popsicle Index is so important, and using as a strategy to get a high Popsicle Index, how are we all going to make money on a rising Popsicle Index?
And you've also shown us how we can use that Solari Investor Circle as to turbocharge these efforts.
Right.
So, Catherine, you've painted an interesting world where, contrary to what some people say, money is hardly the root of all evil. And there might even be an opportunity here to get some folks together that usually look at themselves as being on the opposite side of the table. You might say the venture capital guys or the investment community and the activist community.
Right.
Where one feels that they can't trust the other to honor what each holds dear. In one case, the living equity, and the other case, the financial equity. So here's an opportunity to integrate those and maybe get folks that are interested in making money to also get interested in taking care of the world.
Right. Well, what we're saying is that we're going to decentralize economic and political power by building wealth. In other words, we're building wealth on the pro-decentralization team. We're building wealth by healing the environment. We're building wealth by getting the Popsicle Index up. And in that framework, the two greatest allies in the world should be venture capitalists and activists. Activists have a lot of the knowledge. Venture capitalists bring the money to the table. So potentially we have an alliance which is life-changing, world-changing.
And in terms of decentralization versus centralization, if you have a world where everybody's committed to getting the Popsicle Index up, they'll be able to probably find a balance between both decentralization
and
centralization.
Right. We're not focused on centralizing versus decentralized. We're focused on what works for the Popsicle Index today, not yesterday, today.
And what optimizes it.
Right. We're talking about building a learning culture that evolves endlessly.
Seems like you've created an opportunity where things that are good for me are good for other people, too. It's not a zero-sum game.
It's not a zero-sum game.
In other words, where somebody has to lose, so I win. But summarize again for me how this makes my Popsicle Index go up, and then maybe you can tie in how it makes other people's Popsicle Index go up.
Okay, well, first, I've become much more self-sufficient in terms of energy and other things. So I've reduced the pressure on the U.S. military to run around the world and steal and kill for oil. I'm reducing the pressure to take from others. That's number one. Number two, I pulled my money from tapeworm companies. So companies who have a record or involved in the system that depends on coercion and force, I'm withdrawing, I'm shrinking them, if you will. One, I'm investing in my place in a way that other places can see my success, and the knowledge and the experience can help them do the same in their place. I always say, don't worry about America. America's 73,000 neighborhoods. If everybody takes care of their neighborhoods and networks to help each other do that, you know, that America becomes a wonderful place. So I'm not only doing my place, I'm giving an example, I'm giving leadership that will help other places. And I'm in cahoots. Remember, I'm investing with different groups that are investing in their place. So we're getting smart about our place and helping each other be smart. There's another way. I'm investing in companies that are about solutions. So all the things, the products and services that were useful in my place, I'm investing in the companies that are doing that, who have stock available, you know, that's publicly traded. So both in terms of making my place wonderful, being in cahoots with other places trying to do the same, but also being about investing in companies that build products and services that help us do that. So I'm, you know, in a whole bunch of different ways, I'm helping other people get their Popsicle Index up. Remember when I asked you the question, how many people know that I'm an investor in their company in the old portfolio versus the new portfolio? I'm in the business of backing people who make the Popsicle Index go up and make money doing it. And so I'm promoting a culture where the hero is the guy who makes the Popsicle Index go up. I've created a new hero. I've created a new myth. I created a new world where the guys who make the popsicle index go up get the girls as opposed to the guys who make the popsicle index go down. It's that simple.
And we've done it by creating a new paradigm of financial intimacy.
Right.
Catherine, you and I have spent some time talking together about a profound change that's possible when both local and global come together. And to a certain extent, you're actually extending an invitation, aren't you?
Right.
You're extending an invitation to people who have lots of money and who want a return.
Right.
And who have taken kind of an easy route out.
I think many people with significant financial assets are trapped in the tapeworm. There's no alternative economic vision which is practical and grounded that says here's how we can make money on the popsicle index going up, but there's no culture. You don't have a significant constituency saying I can make money voting with my money in alignment with my values. We've fallen into the trap of believing that we have to destroy things to make money, which is absurd. I mean, you build much more wealth by building things up and building up communities and taking care of the land than you do destroying it. But if you're wealthy, you're trapped in the tapeworm because we don't have the vision and the networks that says, hey, wait a minute, let's build wealth the old-fashioned way. You know, if enough of us start to switch in incremental ways, that we can build a crowd and a constituency and real liquidity behind a healthy economic model. And I'm saying don't have a fight with a tapeworm. Simply withdraw your time, your attention, and your money. We're talking about doing it in a way which is much safer and is simply enervating the tapeworm rather than trying to have a fight with them.
It might be useful just to reiterate what I think are really five legs to the basis of the Soleri model. Strong currencies.
Right.
Public transparency and privacy of individuals.
Right. So it's transparency of shared money. So government money, foundation money, not-for-profit money, and privacy of individual money.
Equity-based.
Equity-based, not debt. Right now we have a debt-based system. Small businesses and small farms, most of us are highly dependent on bank debt.
A concentration on decentralization since the balance has gone so much the other way into centralization.
Right.
And then finally, perhaps the most important one is people taking responsibility.
Right. People taking responsibility. If the popsicle index is not 100% in my place, I'm responsible. I'm accountable for that.
And I think we can see how the Soleri portfolio strategy is very much aligned through a strategy of building financial intimacy, of optimizing these five legs to build a very, very strong foundation for optimization of our world.
Right. And you're always trying to use these strategies to make your popsicle index go up, by however you define that. So you're always trying to use them to make yours go up, subject to one constraint, which is do no harm. Never shrink the total pie. But with that one constraint, it's a very traditional philosophy in many ways, because what it's saying is by understanding what creates value and what destroys value in the greater whole, by understanding that, that's my navigation tool to find opportunities.
It's also very traditional in the sense that by optimizing what's best for yourself, you're actually optimizing what's best for the world. And in neoclassical economics, it hasn't been working this way, but now we've maybe created a model where it can.
Oh, it can. Absolutely.
Beyond Socially Responsible Investing, Part 2, Soleri Portfolio Strategies. And we've learned basically about a new paradigm of investing called financial intimacy to optimize our wealth returns, a more comprehensive understanding also of what wealth means, both financial and natural wealth, you might say, our communities and our relationships, because the world is really made up of lots of communities and lots of relationships. And ultimately, the whole idea is to have our investing activities make that popsicle index go up to 100%.
Right.
Everywhere.
Right.
It seems here, Catherine, that you've given us some good ideas about how to get started in that direction.
So we have come to the end of part two in this two-part series called Beyond Socially Responsible Investing with Catherine Austin Fitz. Part two is entitled Solari Portfolio Strategy, The Power of Financial Intimacy. As always, thank you, Catherine. And as is customary on these audio seminars, we call on Eliana Obadiah for some closing thoughts.
Thank you, Catherine. Thank you so much. Thank you, Harry. Always clear, illuminating, very practical, and geared toward helping us see what our next step needs to be. So now we take the time, as we do after each teleseminar, to settle in a bit and take in what's been offered and personalize it, actually infuse it with our own intentions. So just take a moment and just shift into that place where you're in connection with that which guides and directs you from inside your own being, that connects you to truth, that spurs you to actions that are rooted in truth. We've seen now that we can use our money to create an intimate world. We know now, as Catherine said, that what our money touches, we touch. That what our money does, we do. We understand now how financial intimacy can act actually as a unifying force, that it can actually create world-changing alliances, not just improve our own situations. We know that by understanding what creates value and what destroys value in the greater whole, we can find a navigational tool that will locate those opportunities that are waiting for us. Just take a minute now and ask whatever your inner forces of guidance and direction are to help make you alert to what your opportunities are, the ones that are waiting for you, and for the courage and the patience and the perseverance to engage with those opportunities and see them through. No matter where each one of us is in the process of creating financial intimacy in our lives, we open now to receive more blessing and the support that always comes when we take one more step forward. And wherever we are, whatever we're doing, we give thanks for that which we already have. Even to be in a position where we can consider these matters means that we have great blessing in our lives. So extend that blessing now to those all over the planet who need that blessing. Keep the vision of a financially intimate and responsible world in our hearts, in our plans, in our words, and in our choices. Good evening.